chapter 7, Mark is here, is it? 47, isn't it? 47, text number 58. 58 is on the board?
Yes.
Etaha.
Etaha.
Param. Danu. Etaha. Bhuvi. Gopavadvaha. Govinde. Eva. Nikila. Atmani. Rudha. Bhavaha. Vanchanti. Yat. Bhava. Biyaha. Munayaha. Vayam. Cha. Kim. Brahma. Janmabihi. Ananta. Kata. Rasasya. Etam param tanubhita bhuvikopavadvo.
Etam param tanubhita bhuvikopavadvo.
Govinda eva nikhilatmani rudha bhavaha.
Govinda eva nikhilatmani rudha bhavaha.
Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha. King Brahma Janma Birananta Katara Sasya.
King Brahma Janma Birananta Katara Sasya.
He Tak Paranta Nobito Bhuvigopa Vadvo. Govinda Eva Nikhilatmani Rudha Bhavaha. Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
King Brahma janma birananta katarasasya.
King Brahma janma birananta katarasasya.
Etak paranta nubhita bhuvigopa vadvo. Govinda eva nikhilatmani rudha bhavaha.
Govinda eva nikhilatmani rudha bhavaha.
King Brahma jamma birananta katara sasya. I missed the line, sorry. Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
Vanchanti yad bhava biyo.
King Brahma Jama Virananta Katara Sasya.
King Brahma Jama Virananta Katara Sasya.
Etak Paranta Nubhita Bhuvi Bhukopa Vadvo.
Etak Paranta Nubhita Bhuvi Bhukopa Vadvo.
Govinda Eva Nikhilatmani Rudha Bhavaha. Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
King Brahma janma birananta katara sasya.
King Brahma janma birananta katara sasya.
Eta paranta nubhito bhuvigo pavadvo.
Etak paranta nubhita bhuvigo pavadvo.
Govinda eva nikhilatmani rudha bhavaha.
Govinda eva nikhilatmani rudha bhavaha.
Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
Vanchanti yad bhava biyo munayo vayancha.
Brahma janavi ananta katara sara.
Brahma janma
vyananta katara sasya.
it is from others you want to try?
Etat param tanubito bhuvigo bhavanvo. Govinda eva nikilatma niruddha bhava. Vanchanti yad bhava viyo munayo vayancha. King Brahma janma vidananta katara sasya.
These women.
These women.
Have a little bit more water, please. Param
alone.
Tanu. Their bodies.
Britaha.
Maintained successfully.
Bhuvi.
On the earth. Gopavadvaha. The young cowherd women. Govinde. Lord Krishna. Eva. Exclusively. Nikila. Of all. Atmani. The soul. Rudha. Perfected. Bhavaha. Ecstatic loving attraction. Vanchanti. They desire. Yat. Which. Bhava, material existence, Viyaha, those who are afraid of, Munayaha, sages, Vayam, we, Cha, also, Kim, what use, Brahma, as a Brahmana, or as Lord Brahma, Janmabihi, with births, Ananta, of the unlimited Lord, Kata, for the topics, Rasasya, for one who has a taste. Translation and purport by Vidyananda Maharaj and other devotees. This is again now the beginning, I think of this as the beginning of Uddhava's songs, which he would sing daily after being initiated in one sense or enlightened in the association of the gopis as to the highest form of pure, loving, devotional service to Krishna. He is now inspired to sing these songs, which apparently, as far as I can remember yesterday, Jiva Goswami said that he daily sang these verses whilst he was in Vrindavan daily. So this is the translation of the first one. Uddhava sang, among all persons on the earth, these coward women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmana or even as Lord Brahma himself. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains here the term Brahma Janma Bihi. Brahminical births refers to threefold birth by one, seminal parenthood, two, sacred thread initiation, three, sacrificial initiation. These cannot compare to pure Krishna consciousness. In fact, Sri Uddhava, who spoke this verse, took birth as a pure Brahmana. But he deprecates this position in comparison to that of the exalted gopis. Uddhava sang, among all persons on earth, these coward women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the Infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmin, or even as Lord Brahma himself? Several points come to mind here. Obviously, the first one is the perfect devotional service of the gopis. Pure unalloyed devotion. They only live for Krishna's pleasure. They have no separate interest other than the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna has no separate interest other than their pleasure. They're the highest evolvement of pure love. Their pure love, and then the second point being that this is hankered after by various persons. This level of love, which is doesn't exactly appear in our experience in this world. But this level of love is hankered by those who actually fear material existence. Purpose of our Krishna consciousness, life movement, life itself in fact, Brahman initiation, the perfect purpose of human birth especially, is to approach this platform. One of the first stages may be that one has, here mentioned, maybe, fear of material existence. In the 10th canto also, in the earlier part of the 10th canto, there is the pastime or the incidence of Mother Devaki, how she was very afraid of Kamsa. Kamsa represents material existence. She was very afraid of Kamsa. Kamsa was, as we probably know, was intending to kill her at one stage, although she was like his sister, because he feared that this woman would be the mother of his death. So heinously he tried to kill her. He was prevented. But the main point being that she had great fear of Kamsa. So from then on, She had, as you may know, six children who were all murdered by Kamsa, one after the other. Very sinful act. They were babies. This is some another ordained by karmic arrangement, by providence. Long history behind that. But each one of those children, because they were living entities also, but they represented, there was an allegory going on here, they represented the six enemies of the living entity. The six enemies of the living entity in this world are not probably what many of us would think, but they are actually lust and greed and envy and anger and illusion and madness. They were all born one after the other, personified in a sense, you can say, or at least representative of those particular characteristics or enemies of the soul in this world. So they were all killed by Kamsa. And then after they were apparently killed, then Balaram, of course, appeared in the womb of Devaki. And Balaram is the spiritual master. Here in this verse we see mention of seminal birth. Not in the verse, but in the purport, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this word, Brahma Janma Bhi. Birth is a Brahmana, or otherwise whatever, but he's explaining it to mean three things. Birth, seminal birth, which everyone more or less in different forms takes birth by seeds or by eggs or whatever it may be in this world, but some form of conception is there, and that happens for everybody. It's not necessarily at high, because if one's born in a Brahmin family, you have a good opportunity to progress further, good fortune. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those who take those who fall down, maybe they haven't perfected their spiritual endeavors in this life, that they will not perish, but they will take birth, those who are on the path, that is, in Brahmin families or in the families of rich mercantile men, in people, so that they can carry on with their spiritual practices in the next lifetime. But those who are still more advanced, so that's very good fortune, but those who are still more advanced, they take birth in the family of transcendentalists, those who are already spiritually or, say, more Krishna conscious. So they're different good fortune, taking birth in various families, but that's not the main thing. It's a good fortune, very good fortune. But the main thing is one coming into contact with pure devotional service, as Uddhava, because he's already a pure devotee, but in a different mood. Now he's experienced the mood of the gopis, which he himself has realized is much deeper, much more embellished with various moods of love than anything he's ever experienced. It's so impenetrable love of the gopis. Goes beyond even all social customs. It goes beyond all kind of considerations of what others think about us. Prabodhananda Saraswati, I think it was Prabodhananda, to hell with my regulative principles, my morning bath, Madhavendra Puri, maybe one of these great personas. Now, he doesn't care for all these things. Now, people may criticize me. My family members may think I'm crazy. So many things, but I don't care, because he was so absorbed in his devotion to Govinda, to Krishna. We have to deal with this world, we can't imitate this, that's for sure. And even one who's on that platform and dealing with this material may not manifest it necessarily. But we do have these wonderful pastimes and the mercy that these great devotees give us, or offer us, in order to try to understand these things a little bit more. What is it? Pure love of Godhead. Just like another incident in the Bhagavatam, in the pastime of the when Krishna and the cowherd boys, when they were feeling hungry after this great forest fire and the killing, I think it was Palambasura, And they had fought, then there was a forest fire, and they were feeling very, very much hungry and so on. They were at the banks of the river Yamuna, and at that time they were asking Krishna to kindly satisfy their hunger. Actually, coward boys were not really hungry. They felt that Krishna was hungry, but they knew that Krishna, because he had so much love for the coward boys and vice versa, that he would not want to stop the play of the coward boys on his own account. So they, knowing the mind, this is a pure devotee of the Lord, they know the mind of Krishna. They know his will, his wish. And they mold their lives in such a way, whether it's in the form of song, in the form of dance, in the form of emotion, in the form of activity, just so that it brings pleasure to Krishna. This is pure devotional service. Everything they do and think actually is perfectly, just a perfect arrangement. The spiritual world is full of such perfect relationships and arrangements just for the pleasure of Krishna and all of the other devotees there in the spiritual world. So they had this mentality as coward boys, so they asked Krishna to please, can we do something? So Krishna said, all right, you go off to this village nearby, and there are some Brahmins there performing sacrifices, just like in this commentary here, Prabhupada mentions birth. So these Brahmins were born in Brahmin families, and they were also initiated, Upanayanam, in the family tradition when they are young boys, as Brahmins, and now they've also been initiated in the performance of various sacrifices. It's another kind of initiation, which we don't generally in the ISKCON movement, place where we have our second initiation, but that's not the same thing. They are actually initiated into performing various kinds of Vedic sacrifices. There are many paths of the Vedas, and different spiritual masters are expert in various paths of Vedic knowledge and various sacrifices and so on and so forth. So they were initiated in a particular path to perform various sacrifices. So they were absorbed in their sacrifices. So Krishna said, you go and ask those brahmanas for some satsang, charity in a sense, you could say, or something. Brahmins also give charity. They don't just receive charity, they do give charity. But he said, don't ask in the name of, better you ask in the name of Balaram, because I'm accepted, Krishna said, as a Vaishya. Balaram at least is generally understood as being a Kshatriya. So better you ask in his name. So they went off, and they tried to approach these Brahmanas and try to make their point. But the Brahmanas were totally aloof from their request. They thought, what is this? They were so absorbed in their brahminical sacrificial activities that they did not care for the request of the coward boys. They pretty much just snubbed them. They just ignored them. And they thought, this is not so important. We have more important things to do. These boys are coming here. What is this? They should go home or something. So then the boys were disappointed, and they went back to Krishna. And Krishna said, don't worry, you go back again. And this time you ask the wives of those brahmanas. So the coward boys went back again, and they asked the wives of the brahmanas. And this time again, even the wives of the brahmins, when they heard the words of the coward boys, they also became stunned, as if they were aloof or not responding to them. But their purpose, or their mood, let's say, of being seemingly stunned was totally different. The Brahmins were not stunned, they were just aloof. They were just disinterested, or a little proud, you could say. The coward girls, however, the wives of the Brahmins, as soon as they heard that Krishna and Balaram were nearby, they went into ecstatic rapture. They were stunned in ecstasy. They had just to hear the name of Krishna and Balaram, they couldn't move. It took them a while to respond. And then they didn't give the Brahmins anything, the coward boys anything. They didn't give them anything. Instead, they insisted themselves. They ran into the forest against the will even of their husbands, against their family, against social customs. They ran into the forest with everything they could get their hands on. They didn't care what they looked like. They didn't care what people thought. They didn't care about any kind of social strictures or even the dangers of the material world. They were not even caring. In this purport it says those who are afraid of the material world, that's the first stage. But there's not even a conscious fear here. They're just absorbed, totally absorbed in Krishna. And this is the fear of a pure devotee is that he'll forget Krishna. The fear of a pure devotee is he won't have the chance to offer his existence to Krishna. He's not afraid of the material energy in of itself in one sense. His fear is that, because if you're totally absorbed in Krishna, then there is no fear. This is actually the mood of sannyas, in one sense we can say. There's fearless, there's no fear this much. Because one understands, or one is absorbed, 24 hours here, as it said, katarasayana, that one's always absorbed in topics, or loving topics concerning the sweet pastimes of Krishna. This is the perfection of our existence. In what form it takes, it may vary. But these wives of the Brahmins, they had this ecstatic love for Krishna. It wasn't on quite the same level of depth or involvement as that of the gopis. But nonetheless, it was completely pure. So you can say, without any other consideration, they put aside all other considerations and ran off into the forest with everything they could to give to Krishna and Balaram, who were hungry in the forest, so say. And this was their devotion. And after this incident, of course, there's another aspect of the pastime, but the point we're getting to is that the Brahmanas, when they heard what had happened, they also came to their senses and they started condemning their birth in a Brahmin family. To hell with their Brahminical principles, to hell with their birth in Brahmin families, to hell with their sacrifices. What is the use of it all? It is useless. It's Shrama Evahi Kevalam. Dharmas Vanushita Pungsham Vishwaksena Katarit. Vidahida, is it the verse go? Dharmas Vanushita Pungsham Vishwaksena Katar. I forgot. Shrama Evahi Kevalam is the main line. The last line is a waste of time. Useless waste of time. If we do not develop our attraction towards the personality of Godhead, everything we do is maybe pious, it may be preparation in one sense. We're not condemning entirely. Everything has its part to play in this arrangement in this world. But unless it's understood to awaken or to be connected, as we were hearing the other day, how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj was saying, was in the pastimes of Narottam Das, that even in our practices of Krishna consciousness, if our sadhana or our practices do not awaken our attraction for chanting the holy names of Krishna, they're not really sadhana at all. Sadhana means activities which awaken our attraction for Krishna. And in the beginning, of course, that may not appear to be very prominent, but it's a preparation. But real sadhana is when it leads to this raghunuga. It leads to this spontaneous attraction towards Krishna. The motivation is no longer rules and regulations based upon our perceptions and so on and so forth, but conditioned perceptions. But where there is realized understanding, there is no more covering of anartha. The heart is anyabilasita shunyam jnana karmadya navritam. It is purified of any other interference. There is no interference on the screen. There is no kind of like, well, maybe this, no doubt whatsoever. There is absolute unalloyed acceptance and absorption and affection, developing attraction and then affection for Krishna. Unalloyed. This is the example given here. We understand this is the goal. The mood maybe varies, but the goal is to have this mood of the gopis where they cannot think of anything but Krishna in every circumstance. They're completely absorbed. Anyabilasito ashunyam jnana kamajanavitam. They have no other interest. Anukulyena, their life is pleasing, unpleasing, or favorable, completely favorable attitude towards Krishna, constantly. This is the mood of a pure devotee. For Krishna, anushilanam. Anu is to follow. Means follow. Also means complete. But following Krishna Anu in the mood of Anushilanam. It also means of those devotees who have perfected their love for Krishna. Shilanam is to cultivate. Cultivating that mood, and by following in the footsteps of those devotees who have it. So Uddhava has experienced this now. He's following in the footsteps, you can say, in his prayers at least, of the gopis of Vrindavan. Gopi Bhatra Pada Kamalam Dasa Dasa Anudasa. We follow in the footsteps of those great personalities. This is our disciplic succession, is to follow the pure devotees who have this love of Krishna, and then gradually we can develop by shilanam, cultivation, anushilanam, following their footsteps, cultivating process of devotional service. Gradually we become purified of all these coverings, anavritam, free of coverings, and our mood becomes anukulyena, anukulyena Krishna, favorable towards, pleasing to Krishna. So in the association of those who have that mood, we can develop that mood. So this is what these pastimes are there, given to us by the Lord himself. He performs these pastimes so that we can hear about them and we can absorb ourselves in these particular pastimes. And back to that incident at the beginning of the 10th canto, for instance, when Mother Devaki was fearful of this material world, this is the first point, and she then Balaram appeared as a spiritual master, cleansing her womb, preparing her so that she was it's an allegory, but so that she's ready to actually receive Krishna. Or becoming, when we're fearful of the material world in the proper sense of the word, then we're ready. Well, there's some readiness, not that we're. Prabhupada one time said, the problem with my disciples is that they're not afraid of Maya. We still have this desire to court with Maya, to, you know, take shelter of Maya in various ways. So therefore, you know, we don't really get that opportunity to receive Krishna in the womb or in our hearts. He's there, but we don't realize his presence. He doesn't. Seed may be there, but doesn't manifest. So the spiritual master's business, of Balaram is the original spiritual master, is to cleanse our consciousness by giving us instructions. So allegorically, he cleansed the womb of Devaki in preparation for the appearance of Krishna. So when Devaki had come to, her husband was known as Vasudev, he was also pure goodness. So when in contact with pure goodness, by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord, one comes to pure goodness, not just goodness of this world, which is, you know, compassion of this world and wanting to do good for others. This is a stepping stone, but it's not the Vasudeva which is being mentioned here, which is pure goodness beyond and above the goodness of being a brahmana or being a philanthropist or whatever it may be of this world. It is one who has no influence. He's not affected by the modes. He's beyond his the modes of material nature. He is simply seeing for the ultimate welfare of others, not just within this world, but how the living entity can exist beyond and above this, rising above the modes of material nature. Krishna said to Arjuna, rise above Trigunya Vishaya Vedam, Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna, rise above these modes of nature, Arjuna, be transcendental to all of them. The Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. Help people in this world to become more pious, advance slowly on the path. But beyond and above this material world is this level of Vasudeva, Vishuddha Sattva stage, pure, unalloyed goodness, where there is no selfish motivation whatsoever. And this is the stage or the platform which every living entity has the, you can say, the right to experience and exist on. There's no more suffering, birth and death, no more misunderstandings, no more envy, no more greed, no more anger, no more illusion, no more madness, no more lust. It's lust of different, everything's pure. The things may be there, but not of the material, how we see them, how the effects are in the material world of these various enemies are not very nice. In the spiritual world, even if there's lust, even if you say there's lust, sometimes there appears to be anger, it's only in relation with Krishna. It is only increasing the rasa or the taste in the relationship between Krishna and his devotees. So everything in the spiritual world is relishable. Everything is all pleasing to every living entity. So if we need to go through these stages, we can't jump to this stage of pure unalloyed. Even we can't jump to Raghunuga Bhakti, for instance. Prabhupada describes in the Nectar of Devotion how these topics, very elevated topics, which for our material brains don't really sit very easily, they're a little difficult to relate to sometimes. But these topics are to be heard. We may not be able to go deeply into them to understand them. But Prabhupada said, at least in the Nectar Devotion, there's no need to discuss these things any further at this particular point, as and until one becomes purified or liberated from the effects of the modes of nature. And he specifically says there is a stage in our practice of Krishna consciousness called Anatta Nivritti. Now at the stage, all of us here, at least at one stage of practicing or developing our dormant Krishna consciousness, it may be the beginning stage, we have a little faith, a little bit, and we've come into the association of others who have a little bit of faith and we're hearing something or whatever it is, and we're trying to see how this applies to me. Maybe we haven't quite got to that point yet of actually applying it very much, what we're hearing, which is a very big step. And then the next step is, then I'm going to apply this in my life. We apply something, we start applying the chanting or the devotional practices, whatever it may be. And then, usually in the course of that stage, there is actual official acceptance, initiation we call it, which is not quite the initiation mentioned here, which is more or less a formality, it's more or less a part of social expectation. But the initiation in our Krishna consciousness movement is a little different. It's supposed to be initiation in the line of the mood of Rupa Goswami. That we're accepting this as our goal, to follow in their footsteps, Rupanuga, by accepting the official initiation, of course, in that line, from the representative of Rupa Goswami. And then, in a sense, the sacrifice, one is actually, the later times they would get initiated into that particular form of sacrifice, you can perform that sacrifice. Our sacrifice is, of course, Nam Sankirtan. Our sacrifice is the devotional service as given to us by our acharyas, by our teachers. So the devotee takes that. And ultimately, their initiation, we'll get into that, of the Satguru, who actually introduces us or initiates us into our eternal occupational, that's the Dharma, the spiritual, our eternal Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, our eternal relationship with Krishna. But for the time being, that's not something we have to really overly necessarily go into, because right now we are trying to practice Vaidhi. What's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti? It is dependent upon rules and regulations. So the Brahmins were depending on rules and regulations. Even Uddhava may have had a little bit of reverence in his understanding of Krishna too. The gopis have no reverential feelings in their relationship. They have no fear of anything. They're just completely mad and they'll do anything to get Krishna or to give themselves to Krishna. They don't care for any rules or regulations. The only rule is to just absorb oneself fully in Krishna. So we're certainly not on that level. And neither do our teachers appear to be teaching like that. Even if they're on that level, to communicate with us, they don't necessarily behave like that or teach like that. But they are like that. They are in that mood, the mood of the gopis. Our acharyas, Prabhupada said, are all in the mood of either this Madhurya rasa or Sakya rasa. About their caravan boys or the mood of the gopis. So, especially the manjaris. So they're in this mood of living for Krishna's pleasure. That's the reason they come to this world. They come to this world because they want to bring pleasure to Krishna by taking his parts and bringing his parts and parcels to him for both the parts and parcels' pleasure and Krishna's pleasure. The whole point is like this. So they're in that mood, and by following their instructions at the ABC stage that we're on, one gradually develops, by their mercy, one develops this understanding, this mood. The first stage is they engage us in various acts of purification called Vajana Kriya, and by practicing Vajana Kriya, practicing these devotional practices according to our condition, gradually our service becomes Nishta Vajana Kriya, steady. In the beginning it's Anishtita, it's unsteady. And then gradually the service becomes steady. And then steady practice of Vajana Kriya results, a little bit becomes more steady. By the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the devotees, it becomes a now we go through the stage of Anatta Nivritti, where all of the unwanted coverings within the heart are removed. Right now we suffer problems We go through various doubts and troubles because we have so many anattas, clouds covering our sky of our consciousness. They have to be removed if we want to actually have a clear perception of Vasudeva, pure, without the influence of these other things, these other motivations, these other desires and attachments and reactions which are still plaguing us in various ways. That may take some time, but that's the anatta nivritti stage. By the mercy of Krishna, we, and the mercy of Guru, one can pass through a stage. So Balaram, in other words, like in a sense, Devaki, heart completely purified, cleansed. She's an aloe vera, it's not necessary. She wasn't already, she was already a pure devotee. But nonetheless, this is the example given by the Asodipa. When we actually give up that endeavor, Vishaya Charya Sevasi Majya Mukibolo Hari Hari. When we actually are willing, not that we have, willing to give up Vishaya Charya, willing to give up this endeavor for selfish pursuits of trying to enjoy mentally and physically this material world, then one is very prepared to receive the actual full mercy or the understanding of Krishna consciousness. So this is the situation we have following in the path of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So that when one comes to the stage of Nishtha, it is said then that Prabhupada said at that stage, when one is beyond this anatta nivritti stage, the removal of unwanted perceptions and desires within our heart and tendencies to a large, a very large degree, not entirely necessarily, but to a vast degree, to a predominant degree, then the whole concept of raganuga or spontaneous loving attraction towards Krishna starts to take effect, if we are following in the footsteps of those acharyas who have that mood. So following in the footsteps of the gopis of Vrindavan, we regularly chant this and remember this, is what we're doing in the Krishna consciousness movement. We may not be on the platform of entering into those pastimes, we may only be on the platform of hearing them and wondering what this is all about. But we are following in the footsteps of those who have the realization. And if we follow sincerely, yasya devi pra bhakti yata devi tathagaro tasya tayati takata prakashante mahatmanah, everything will be revealed in course of time, step by step by step. We have to take it step at a time, step at a time. It's like Srimad Bhagavatam. This is 10th canto, in the heart of the 10th canto. So we're still approaching the lotus feet in the first, second canto in principle. Our service, we're still, Prabhupada said, we have to go through the Bhagavatam canto by canto by canto, not just read it like a parrot or a tape recorder or something, but it has to be with an application. And then one becomes more and more ready for the next stage, like in any process of going up a building or up a mountain or an educational path or through our life. We go from one stage to another. One leads to the next. One is a preparation for the next. And then we're ready for the next. You can't imagine what it would be like when you're a young child. What it's like to the responsibility of having a family and looking after money and so many things. But gradually we evolve and we're ready to actually take on those responsibilities. It's a natural, not a difficult thing really. Because when we're ready, it's quite easy. So we're being prepared like this, gradually, step by step. Krishna consciousness is a preparation. We're all at different stages, so there's a different, slightly different preparation for whatever stage we're on in our path back to Godhead, in our path to this stage of pure, loving, devotional service. We don't become too hung up with the stage we're on. We have to act according to the stage we're on and follow the rules according to the stage we're on, but we don't try to make that the goal. That is a sadhana, is a practice which is meant to lead us to the ultimate sadhya or goal, which is this pure, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. We have a lot to look forward to, and we have a lot to work on now. It's very exciting and a very necessary contribution, I can say, to the world. People want peace, but there is no peace as long as they are within this, under the influence of the three modes of nature. There is no peace. We need to rise above the modes of nature, above the clouds, and then there will be no more showers, no more storms, no more disturbances, to enter into the atmosphere where Krishna is in the center, from whichever angle one looks at. He's always in the center. There's no other perversion or deviation. So we'll finish there. This is the first verse of Udhava's. Tomorrow we'll hear the second. Any questions? Not something you necessarily learn. Sometimes people, they think that you can learn about, for instance, one example, Raghunuga Bhakti, and you're automatically eligible, but it's not quite like that. Prabhupada writes in an extra devotion that this will be revealed to you in course of time. It comes revelation. What that revelation is, the spiritual master, of course, his even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he approached his spiritual master Ishwara Puri with a sort of a similar question, and he said, "Well, since you've given me this mantra, I've been chanting this mantra, I'm feeling like I'm going mad in ecstasy." Spiritual master confirmed that this is a symptom that you've actually chanting the holy name. This is a symptom of pure chanting of the holy name. He confirmed it with his spiritual master. So we have in our parampara, this is the process. We confirm it with others. We don't just assume, even if it is, we don't just assume. One always checks and balances are there. One always checks with one's spiritual master, Guru Shastra and Sadhu. That's what the arrangement normally is. So we check with Guru Shastra and Sadhu what is the actual, whether it's correct or not correct, whether we're doing, whether we should or shouldn't practice devotional service or in a particular mood, we would check our spiritual authorities. The Lord is in the heart as well, of course, and if we're sincere, we'll be constantly praying to Him for guidance and the strength to carry on in our devotional practices in a way which is correct. So in this way, if you're sincere, Krishna will also reciprocate. But practically speaking, we check it. I mean, there are some external symptoms which may indicate, but we don't take those as necessarily, you know, like the cessation of material desires, losing interest in the necessities or the dependencies of this world, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all these things should be subsiding, and naturally one will become more attracted towards hearing and chanting about Krishna. But the Sangam, the association of devotees, is so important in ascertaining these things and in being sure that this is not just a figment of one's imagination or something imitation or false, but it is the proper thing to do. But Prabhupada also says there in the Nectar Devotion that even if one is on a higher stage of Raghunuga, spontaneous devotion, one does not manifest it in this world. So one does need to take guidance and advice in order to see that we don't either artificially try to... I mean, back in 1970, I think it was, or maybe a little later, 74, maybe 5 or something, when it wasn't 70, mid-70s, devotees in L.A., there was a group of devotees who were hearing about this Raghunuga Bhakti, and they thought that the process was to practice it. So they started to... Raghunuga Bhakti, if you don't know, is the form of devotional service which is specifically following in a particular mood of the Ragatmikas or the pure devotees in Vrindavan. And by following in their mood, you also develop that mood. And you know, you may be a peacock or something, so your spiritual master will also be introducing you to the service of being a peacock in the spiritual world. And so these devotees, they I don't know what they had ultimately in thinking on their mind and who they were following, I don't know, but they were actually imitating these things, and some of them were actually jumping around like peacocks, preparing themselves to be peacocks in the spiritual world. So what's going on, as if it's something mundane. This is called sahajya. They cheaply think that we're a gopi or a gopa or a cow, peacock, whatever it is. And this came to Prabhupada's attention. He was very upset, extremely upset with this type of imitation. And he said, no. He said, well, Prabhupada, we're only reading your books, like this section of the Bhagavatam, which wasn't even there then. But he said, Prabhupada said, then they said, if we've read all these things in Chaitanya Charitamrita and this and that, Prabhupada said, then why don't you read chapter 7 of the Adilila? You're not past that stage yet. So, you know, he wasn't very impressed, to say the least. He was this cheap, wanted things to be cheap. It's only by the mercy of the pure devotee that we can rise to another stage. And he'll make that clear. One way or another, he'll make it clear to us that we're ready. You know, this is like in education. How do you know you're ready for the next stage? The authorities decide. You may feel that you should be, but you're not the one who makes the final decision. The authorities decide. You can imitate if you want, but it won't be very effective. You have to go through the authoritative path. Anything else? Yes? Stay away from them. Engage them in Krishna's service. We don't see rising above them is not necessary. It's not, although the word is mentioned here, fear of the material energy in one sense. It's that's one thing. The devotee is not necessary. He's afraid of becoming a servant of the material energy. He's afraid of becoming absorbed in trying to enjoy the material energy. He's not exactly afraid of the material energy, because the devotee sees the material energy as Krishna's energy. He sees the modes of nature as Krishna's energy. So he tries to engage whatever we've got due to the effects of the modes of nature. We all have different minds and bodies given for our usage or our pleasure in this world. And we try to engage that in Krishna's service. And when we see other people who are in the modes of nature, for instance, example, somebody who's perhaps a little overwhelmed by the mode of ignorance, maybe becoming angry or nasty or something, we understand that person is overcome by the modes of nature. They're not a nasty person. They're just covered over by the mode of ignorance, and they're acting according to the drive of that mode. So we don't feel animosity towards anyone or anything. We just try to adjust everything in relation with Krishna. This is the only solution. It's not just trying to adjust the modes, it's trying to dovetail everything in relationship with Krishna. In this way, you're not overcome or overwhelmed by the effects of the modes, because they become connected to Krishna. Even ignorance, I was discussing this one time, how we engage in ignorance in Krishna's service. Well, in a sense, sleep, when our sleep is regulated, sleep is usually considered to be kind of the mode of ignorance. Well, we regulate that sleep in Krishna's service. Certain bodily features have to be dealt with, but we do it in Krishna's service. We regulate our sleep in a way which is favorable for Krishna consciousness, not sleeping too much, trying to be regulated in our sleeping, and so on and so forth. So this way we have to see how these modes, how everything can be engaged in Krishna's service, and this way we will not be captivated or controlled by their effects. They'll be controlled by Krishna. This is the only process. Daivi Yeshu Gurmai Mamamaya Darachaya Mamevi Epapadyante Mayamitam Tarantite. It is very hard. We can't overcome these modes of nature. But when we surrender to Krishna, then we can easily cross beyond. We'll become free of the influence of the three modes. Then the main thing is becoming attached to Krishna. But the process is, whatever we've got at our disposal now, we engage that in Krishna's service, gradually we become attached to Krishna. Our tongue, our body, everything we have, engaging in Krishna's service. Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi.